Welcome to the Aquarimax Audio Show with Russ and Kim. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 305, recorded September 19th, 2016.
Greetings, Aquarimaxers.
Hi, everybody.
305, here we are.
Yeah. 305.
Sorry about the ambient noise. I'm not sure what that was.
Something falling someplace.
Okay, well, I wanted to make a couple of announcements, but we should say who's going to be in the show today first.
Okay. We have Mike in Tennessee, and Tom in Provo, Utah, and Joe in Hudsonville, Michigan.
So welcome back, contributors. All right, so the thing I wanted to mention was I'm working with the multifasciatus, the shell-dwelling cichlids. Mm-hmm. And I mentioned that last time, I think, but interesting dynamics going on. They're always having territorial skirmishes and so on. I actually ended up moving one of the dominant males because it's being so aggressive. One of the fish was in the very subordinate position of the corner of the tank up at the top.
Mm.
And this particular male, I really don't want him to be contributing to the gene pool very much because...
The one who's being mean?
The one who's being mean. He also seems to have a jaw deformity, which I'm not sure is not genetic.
Well, that's not good.
I'm sure there's a fair bit of inbreeding going on in the multifasciatus populations out there. So one of them, in fact, appears to be... have the same sort of mutation that a balloon molly has.
Oh, I don't like those.
Yeah, and there are a couple of other fish that they breed that have that particular condition, and this one of them seems to have it. So I may remove that one eventually so that it's not contributing to mm-hmm. the gene pool either, but this really aggressive male, I've moved it to another tank, and it seems to be doing fine, but hopefully I can get the population... I can get the other fish to be fairly gentle. I don't know. I'm trying. Mm-hmm. I put some extra shells in and moved some shells around a bit to try to disturb the territoriality mm-hmm. a little bit. We'll see how it goes. I may have to add another fish or two and move things around additionally just to get the gene pool going, mm-hmm. trying to refresh it a little bit. And so we'll see how it goes. But in the meantime, I have moved it.
There you go. We'll see how that goes. I guess we have sad pet news today, although it's not fishy news.
Mm.
Cosmo, our kitty, came home this morning. He usually sleeps indoors, and I guess last night he didn't come home. And he came home this morning, apparently having been on the wrong end of a fight.
We had to take him into the vet and get him patched up a bit.
And he had so many puncture wounds on him, the vet couldn't even find them all because it hurt too much to finish shaving him. So we gave him some antibiotics and some pain meds, and we brought him home and put his cone of shame on him so he can't lick them. And he's sleeping under a blanket in my lap. It was so sad. He just kind of looks up at me and says, "Oh, I've had a hard day."
So if you have cats and you can keep them indoors, probably a good idea. We tried with him, but
I know that's
work.
A giant controversy, but I kind of feel like he's a living being, not a stuffed animal, and he deserves to feel the grass under his feet and feel the sun and the wind and chase grasshoppers. And
I guess it's a matter of risk assessment.
Seeing him, well. It's like our kids would be safer their whole lives if we kept them in plastic bubbles, but it wouldn't be much of a life.
I know what you're saying.
I don't think safety is a virtue in and of itself. I hate seeing him hurting. I don't want him to get into squabbles, and I don't want him to hurt, but I wouldn't confine him to strictly indoors. There are definitely cases for strictly indoor cats.
Mm-hmm.
They're declawed, or you live in a much more urban area, or you're in an apartment building, that kind of thing. But he would be so depressed if he didn't get to go outside.
I understand that. That's why we let him outside.
Yeah.
He doesn't like it when we don't, but it's just a risk. Anyway, I guess that's a tangent.
Yeah, sorry. I'm good at those. You guys know that by now. You love me anyways. It's a good thing. Okay, Mike in Tennessee. He says, "Hey, Aquarimax, I am writing back to tell you what happened with the tiger barbs I emailed you about. I had two hanging in the corner of the tank in a vertical position and not moving. Well, one of the two died, and the other joined the school and is swimming around and happy. Now I have a school of 9 happy tiger barbs. I never got around to moving the red-tailed shark because just by that one dying, the problem was solved. I guess that one barb that hung out with the barb that died was a friend till the end. Thanks again for your thoughts on the situation. I love your podcast. Good work."
That's very interesting.
Yeah. He was being the nurse barb.
That's one to add to the files. I've never had that particular case occur before, so something I learned. Interesting.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, thanks for sharing.
Should we go on to Tom?
Yeah.
Provo?
Mm-hmm.
Says, "A few weeks ago I wrote asking about something Mick highly recommended for removing oily scum from the surface of a tank. As I remember, it was some sort of film, but higher tech than a paper towel. It was not, however, chemical that would go in with a filter medium. Mick responded, but I forgot what he said it was, and short of spending several hours listening to previous podcasts, I don't know how to find it. Supposedly I can deal with this issue by increasing surface turbulence, but I prefer not to add another piece of equipment or risk reducing CO2 levels in the water. Help would be appreciated."
Well, I would agree that surface turbulence could help, but it could also, it would also decrease CO2 levels. The product in question that Mick mentioned, I went back and looked, was Polyfilter.
Oh, okay. That's just the name of it.
So it's not a chemical. It is like a pad, but it's kind of a special pad that you use.
Made specifically for that?
For
or it's removing like that stuff that you get at the craft
from the water
store.
No, it's an aquarium product.
Is there a specific brand?
It's called Polyfilter.
Oh, that's the brand. Like brand and product is the same name. They just make one thing.
Well, I don't know, but I don't know if there's like a... I'm sure there's a company that makes it, but the trade name of the... product is Polyfilter.
Okay.
So that's the one he was talking about.
Okay.
Hopefully that helps.
Hopefully you can get rid of the oily scum.
Yeah, it's annoying stuff.
Because nobody likes oily scum on anything, really.
True. I can't think of any applications. True.
Even if you're cooking food, you know, you might like a buttery sheen, but you don't want an oily scum. Totally different.
It's true.
Okay, Joe from Hudsonville, Michigan. He says, "Hello, Kelly and Russ." Joe from Hudsonville, Michigan here. I've had a life get crazy busy. Don't worry, I have kept up on Aquarimax and my quote-unquote daughter's aquarium. Meaning, I guess, that it's really his.
At least partially, I guess.
I just haven't had any time to write in. Their tank, planted with emerald-eyed reservoirs, cardinal tetras, a large tiger nerite snail, lots of shrimp, and lots of assassin snails. Apparently, if you purchase another small nerite snail and house him in the tank for the evening with a plan of transportation to my wife's work tank, the assassin snails will be eating the small nerite snail in the morning, even though they refuse to touch the large nerite snail. Live and learn. Thanks, as always, for the wonderful podcast.
Isn't that interesting?
How big are big nerite snails?
Well, I guess it depends on the species. I'm not sure which kind he has. I've had some that probably exceed the size of a cherry.
And that's too big for assassin snails?
I don't know. I've heard varying things on assassin snails and their capacity to eat larger snails.
Do they ever hunt in packs?
Well,
or do they just individually gang up on something?
I guess it depends upon your definition of hunt in packs.
I mean, like, hey guys, let's all go take down that nerite snail and have nerite snail steaks for dinner, versus I'm gonna get it first and they all charge it.
Okay, well, it's hard to tell with snails which one it might be. It is definitely true that a large number of assassin snails will attack a larger snail at the same time, or approximately the same time. Mm-hmm. But since they're all doing it at a snail's pace anyway, you know, it's kind of hard to tell what's going on.
They don't, like, have walkie-talkies to coordinate strategy.
And maybe they don't need them, I don't know. But I have seen more than one assassin snail attacking another snail, certainly. It's not uncommon at all. I would say, you know, I don't know to what extent they cooperate, if any.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? But it's very interesting that they leave this particular snail alone, and then a very similar snail they attack when it's added freshly. Now, did the Nerite predate the assassin snails in the tank?
The
I wonder
big
if that
one?
Has anything to do with it.
I don't know. Do they care? Because if you put them in a tank full of other little snails that were there before them, they'll still eat them.
True, but Nerites, at least some people report that Nerites are relatively less likely to be eaten than some other types of snails.
Interesting. Maybe they don't taste as good.
I don't know. Well,
maybe just
this
the
one
little
did.
young tender ones taste good. The other ones, they get too tough and gamey, you know, they're too old.
Well, I don't know. It's very puzzling.
They get stringy.
Maybe. But, you know, with various tanks, like in a marine tank, if you're going to add an aggressive fish, the rule is add it last.
Yeah.
Because all the other
true.
Fish will have
set up
an
their
opportunity
own
to
do.
Yeah, they have
boundaries
bolt holes and territories and boundaries and so on. They'll feel a little bit more confident. So when the aggressive one gets in there, it can hold its own, but it's not going to be able to oust the other ones as easily.
Mm-hmm.
And so it kind of makes me wonder if there's something like that going on here, or if it's something simpler, if it's that species of Nerite snail is less tasty, or it is.
Mm-hmm.
Does it have to do with size or age? I don't know. Very interesting.
That would be interesting.
But I do not have the answer. But
that
it is.
Would be an interesting, if somewhat gruesome, study.
Like a science project.
Yeah.
Or something.
At what size will the assassin snails keep eating the Nerite snails, and at what size do they leave them alone?
Yeah, and does it have anything to do with new scents? I mean, when a snail is added to a new environment,
mm-hmm.
does it smell different than when there's already a snail in the environment to the assassin snails?
I don't know.
Does it release, like, substances that indicate its stress levels, and the assassin snails pick up on it when it's new? You know, it's
mm-hmm.
being subjected to all these stressors as it's being transported. And
so basically they can smell its fear.
I don't know. It would be interesting to see how that works.
We should make, like, a sci-fi / horror movie starring assassin snails. Like giant outer space assassin snails.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be scary.
On land or in the water?
I don't know.
Or both.
Maybe both.
They'd have to be
maybe they
fast.
Start out, they're just in the water and you think you're safe on the land. But then at the end, they come eat you on the land.
Yeah.
I know, with all these gruesome wounds sitting in my lap, that must be.
Yeah. He doesn't actually look too bad though now.
It looks better.
He's been cleaned up. Well, two interesting things like that today. Interesting behavioral
things.
Yeah. Behavioral occasions. What am I thinking? I'm trying to think of it.
Instances.
That's exactly the word I'm looking for. Instances. Anyway, I think that's nearly all for this week, isn't it?
I think so.
So I'm going to push the button that sends us to
the button, Max.
We'll say goodbye, and we'll say may the fish.
Goodbye. Oh, I was going to sing the goodbye song.
And thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. To leave comments or questions that could be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.